Okay. Call in to Dr. Ellman. He's on the plane. Okay.
Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Baruch Hashem.
I'm in the picture, I'm getting so you don't hear all this stuff.
Okay, you're actually on the plane?
No, I'm checking in, and okay. I've got to go through security, but
okay.
you won't hear anything.
Okay, very good. Good morning. We're learning today Perek Chav Ches, the 28th Perek of the Gvuras Hashem. And where is it up to? So again, he's not doing every single step of the Parsha of Shemais, of Moshe Rabbeinu's appointment as the Shliach Hashem to go and take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, but he's choosing sections. And the section he's discussing today is when Moshe Rabbeinu points out to Hashem, Lo Yish Dvarim Anechi. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I am not a man of words. Gam Yitzmoel, Gam Yishilshoim, not from yesterday, not from the day before. Gam Yoz Dabercho El Avdecho, from whenever you spoke to me. Right, for as long as you've been speaking to me, I'm not an Ish Dvorim. I'm not a man of words. I'm not an orator. So he says, so why are you choosing me to go and speak to the Jewish people? So ask the Maral, very simple, some important question. Yesh Lahakshos, one needs to ask Moshe, he says, I don't understand. Moshe Rabbeinu had alamailus. He had all kinds of strengths and advantages, all good qualities. He was a great man. Moshe Rabbeinu even had significant physical strength. We pointed out elsewhere that Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amas tall, he was extremely a person of tremendous stature. How is it that Moshe Rabbeinu was not an Ish Dvorim? How is it that he was not a person who was able to speak properly? U'nechshav min ha'shleimus. When that is considered something significant, something that of course should be important, and especially important for a Navi. Why would he not have these things? Why would he not have the power of speech in an effective way? So we're going to take a look, we'll see, of course, this is the question. Why did Hashem not give Moshe Rabbeinu? Why did he not endow him originally with a significant power of speech? However, before looking at what the Maral has to say on this subject, which is very much al derech haMaral, it's very much a conceptual explanation, I would like to learn with you another very classic source on this issue, on this question, which is from the Ran. The Droshos HaRan also discusses why it is that Moshe Rabbeinu did not have such a developed power of speech. Why did he have this? And the Ran discusses this in the Drusha Shlishi, in his third drusha, in his third presentation, which is published in the work Drusha Saran, and he actually says it even as he acknowledges that generally speaking, Nevi'im are given all kinds of. The Gemara says in Nedarim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Masher Shechinasai, only makes his divine presence on somebody who is Gibor, Ashir, Chacham, a person who is strong, a person who is wealthy, a person who is smart. The Gemara says a Bal Kaima, a person who is tall. The person is supposed to be Shalem B'chol HaShlemius, right, because that will be impressive to the people, and Yudvarav Nishmoim. But he says, but Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, he says, "Ain't suffik." The Ran asks, "Achri amalas hasichlias umalas hamidas, following on intelligence and good character, ain shum mailas shetiya yoyser uyal navi mizais liyoyser tzarich ledaber tongue thinko rabbi mamim." Says, what would be the third most important, so to speak, strength of a Navi, besides wisdom, besides character? He would say, you would think it would be the power of speech, because after all, that's what he's supposed to do. In fact, many understand, Rashi says, that the Lashon Navi means from the term Medaber, Milashon Niv Sefosayim. So why is it, right, the Ran brings that, he quotes that Rashi over here. Not in the name of Rashi, but he says the same idea. So if that's the case, why would it be that Moshe Rabbeinu would be handicapped in this particular manner? So the Ran explains as follows. I mean, he goes on, even he brings that the Gemara seems to say, how could Moshe Rabbeinu have a mum when it says, Vinei Nar Boicha, that he seemed to have a deep voice, that's strange, it would be making Moshe Rabbeinu a Baal Mum. So why weren't they troubled by the difficulties of Moshe Rabbeinu to speak? And the Ran says a very interesting answer, which it's a little hard for me always to reconcile this exactly with why the Navi is supposed to be impressive in other ways, but this is what he says. The Torah and the acceptance of the Torah is the most significant thing in human experience, period. Therefore, it is appropriate that the people who receive this Torah, that they should be given significant proofs that this Torah is true. The delivery of Torah should be in a manner which is unimpeachable. It should be very clear that what's happening is through a divine force. He says that's the purpose of Yitzias Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do miracles and signs that would be a good initiation, a good start to the Torah, so that Klal Yisrael would know, recognize and realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has nothing which stands in his way. What stands in the way of nature, of people, does not stand in the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's a fundamental belief in order for a person's Yiddishkeit to be able to survive. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show this at the beginning. So he says, so likewise, we find the same thing. Excuse me, he goes on and he speaks about the idea of Tevin Atamachnis Lafarayim, that specifically HaKadosh Baruch Hu even did the miracles in a place where there was sorcery at its best, and he showed them up, and in that way it was demonstrating the truth of the Isis. So he says, Ulezais Hasiba, and for this purpose, Nishlamesha Bechol Shlemus, Yavil Hamin Shinyane Bekoyach Eliki. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu, on the one hand, was given all types of perfection, that he should be seen as that he came endowed with divine strength. But v'chusar mimenu bashkocha gemura hadibur hatzach. But the one thing which was taken away from him, in other words, he came as a beautiful specimen of a person, so people would see him as something which is, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has an interest in. But at the same time, specifically, the power of speech was taken away. Leman lo yechoshev. So it shouldn't be considered sheyoyis klal Yisrael udeleim nimshachim achrav, that the reason why the Jewish people followed Moshe Rabbeinu was limoshcham acher tzachus devorei, because they were convinced by how articulate he was. Kimoshi yadua, as it is known, sheyomer al mishu tzach hadibur. They'll say about someone who speaks. Smoothly, he could tell them the Brooklyn Bridge, right? Because he's a fast and a smooth talker, right? So the person who has the right charismatic speech, so he will be able to sell anybody on anything. So if Moshe Rabbeinu was blessed with that gift, the gift of gab, so then it would be not enhancing the situation of his prophecy, but in fact undermining it. But since we see that Moshe Rabbeinu was normally not able to convince anybody of anything, but when it came to the word of Hashem, he would be able to communicate the word of Hashem convincingly, that shows Shechina medaberes mitech grenei shel Moshe, that it's the divine presence that's at work over here that is making this effective. I'm sorry, what did you want to ask?
So you have the light and thunder and, you know, all the special effects of Mount Sinai. And you have, I mean, like the Ron just said, you have the 10 plagues. Doesn't that weigh against a smooth-talking leader? In other words, you know, Klal Yisrael, in terms of the power of persuasion, you have this entire light show going on at Mount Sinai. Moshe didn't have to be a fast talker at that point. I mean, they see what they're, you know, this is powerful stuff.
So therefore, you're saying that even with Moshe Rabbeinu being fadpeh, he could still be slick?
You know, it's not, his power of speech is incidental. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. Because that's not what's convincing Klal Yisrael. I mean, if you need to have convincing, something, you know, beyond, I mean, what the Ron seems to be saying is the substance should stand for itself. The substance isn't standing for itself. Because you have all these other things that are going on. So how come you're allowing thunder and lightning, and you're allowing, you know, all these other things which are beyond substance.
I don't think he is saying that. I think in fact, if anything, he's supporting what you're saying. It's not he says Mishu Klapek Loshan Gamha Emes Bimenu Loyakubo Kiim Lchaizek Higoloisai. A person who has a hard time communicating, even if he says something which is true and right, people won't listen to it unless everything about it is extremely compelling. The packaging won't do it, but everything around it would be extremely compelling. Part of what was compelling around Moshe Rabbeinu was the Nisei Mitzrayim. A huge part of what was compelling around Moshe Rabbeinu was the Mamad Har Sinai, that people saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu, and so on and so forth. So all of those things made Moshe Rabbeinu effective, but Moshe Rabbeinu was not effective because of Moshe Rabbeinu's own personality, because Moshe Rabbeinu's own ability to communicate nicely and smoothly, that was in fact a point against him. In order for him to be effective, he needed to have the Isis, the Mifsim of Mitzrayim, the Isis, the Mifsim of Har Sinai, the power of the words of Torah itself, the Koran Arpan of Shalmaisha, all these sort of metaphysical supports, but not the kind of thing that even if a person didn't have reality behind him, he would be able to still be compelling and convincing. That's, I think, the idea. That's the idea which the Ran says. And he goes on, he discusses it some more. So the Maral, the Ran, his idea is that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was kvad peh u'kvad lashon was because, you know, as you know, someone said, here, I'm going to, with both hands tied behind my back, I'm still going to be able to do this. Right? With my natural abilities in this particular area limited, you will still see that the words are going to come through to the Bnei Yisrael. And that shows the divine strength of the words. Now, as I said before, it's a little bit at tension, it seems to me, with the fact that the Maran says a Navi is supposed to have also these kinds of physical properties that make him impressive to people. He's supposed to be wealthy and strong and a person of physical stature and so on and so forth. Right, because that makes the person impressive to people. Make the person, now that's you know, almost the equivalent of being smooth talking. But the Ran seems to be balancing between the smooth talking, which is actually the delivery system, which is a very teva dikka delivery system that anybody who has the gift of smooth talking would be able to convince anybody of everything, as opposed to these other things which are just signs of being a blessed and gifted a human being, which you can't have Moshe Rabbeinu a balmum. You can't have Moshe Rabbeinu to be, you know, the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose for this important mission should be someone with physical deficiencies, that people wouldn't see this person as somebody admirable. They should be somebody that's, you know, that's the, you know, in a certain sense, the image of perfection. But at the same time, when that perfection, when those skills would go so far that they could mislead, so to that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it away. That's the way the Ran sort of balances these two considerations. And therefore, this particular disability of Moshe Rabbeinu was given to prove the power of the message when it was despite the weakness, this particular weakness of the messenger. So learns the Ran. The Maharal does not use this approach at all. The Maharal's approach is not a practical approach, which is the Ran's approach. The Ran's approach to this, the Maharal's approach to this, is a philosophical approach. And he views the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did not have a natural koach hadibur, a natural power of speech. Remarkably, he views it as being a strength of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not a weakness that he was able to nevertheless convince the Jewish people, which shows the strength of Hashem associated with Moshe Rabbeinu, but he actually learns that the that it is, that this is actually a strength of Moshe Rabbeinu. It was actually a strength of Moshe Rabbeinu that Moshe Rabbeinu was able, that did not have this Koach HaDibur. Now, why is that? And we have to think about it. And we also have to realize, to some degree, what Moshe Rabbeinu here in this matter, what the Maharal is up against in saying this. Because usually we speak about the Koach HaDibur, about the power of speech, as the unique power of a human being. Ruach Memalala. Right? All the reasons why the Ran made in asking his question, that, you know, after Midas and Seichel, what greater strength is there for a Navi to have than the Koach HaDibur, and than the power of speech? The Ran seemed to say specifically because he needs to convince, but even we would say, you know, it says, Vayibadam lenefesh chaya, Vayadam lenefesh chaya is the power of speech. So why would not having the power of speech actually be a strength of Moshe Rabbeinu? And the Maharal explains that it is true that the power of speech is a sign of the soul, you know, in the body, and so on and so forth, but it's shleimus haguf. Okay, what we're going to say, this power of speech is a physical property, and as a physical property, as even perhaps the final and finishing physical property of a human being, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have it, because Moshe Rabbeinu, in fact, was not a completely physical human being. Okay, this is, I would say, if we would want to say the abstract of the thought that the Maharal is here to offer, is that Moshe Rabbeinu, being that he is not a purely physical, completely physical human being, so therefore the power of speech, to the extent that it represents the gemar, the completion of physicality, he didn't have it. And I want to share with you how the Maharal explains this. And he explains this in a couple of different phases. First, he says as follows, briefly. Very interesting thing. He says, Ein kayach bilti nivdal min achamri, k'may apev ha-haloshein. He says again, the principle is Moshe Rabbeinu is rachek min achamer. Moshe Rabbeinu is distant from physicality. And there is none of the kayachis, none of the powers, I would say the senses, that is removed from chumri, from physicality, less than the mouth and the power and the tongue, the power of speech. And he says, for example, because eyesight, ein pulasan bitznua rak b'menucha. Right? If I just am sitting here like this, right? What do we call? Especially this is appropriate to note for Super Bowl Sunday. What do you call a person who's sitting and watching, you know, television and listening to the sounds of the television all the time? That person's called a couch potato, right? Right. So you know, you just
Raven fan.
What? Yeah. So So I don't know if during the game today, Baltimorean will actually just sit and watch passively. However, but you know, normally the person is called a couch potato, right? They just sit there, right? They just sit there and watch and listen, because watching and listening do not require activity or movement. You know, one would say to some degree as well, smell, taste, right? All of these kaychais per se, they don't require activity or movement on the part of the person. But the power of speech, you cannot speak without moving, right? So whereas all of these other senses are without movement, the power of speech is with movement. And he says, "V'zeh inyan sichli." This is a matter of sechel. Ki agashmi poel b'tznua. V'lakach le'emash v'kayach adibur shu gashmi. He says physicality is something which is poel, which acts with tznua, with movement. Whereas something which is more sublime will not have to, you know, involve physical movement in order to be able to be there. Right, the idea, this is an idea, this is again one of the conceptual ideas which we have in several places in the Maral, and that is that, the way I like to say it shorthand is the way my, Rabbi Ramesh Shapira says, is that we have earth and we have heavens. Right? Oretz, earth, comes from the term rutz, moving. And Shamayim comes from the term Shem, there. In other words, Oretz is moving towards Shamayim, towards Shem, where there's arrival, where you're there. Because everything about Olam Hazeh is about process, about trying to take step after step after step after step to move forward. It's always moving and changing. Physicality is the changing. Spirituality is the constant, is that which is there, which is in place. So says the Maral, in that sense, when you look at the power of speech, which always requires movement, it is different than these other things which do their work passively, just sitting there. Just sitting there. And that's one distinction which he makes to show that the power of speech is most chumri, in a certain sense, is most physical. But the Maral has to challenge that. And again, as we noted already, to some degree, in our discussion, this is the tension which we have to deal with, which is that the power of speech is also considered to be, in a certain sense, the loftiest. Right? He says, we're going to explain later in the Gvuras Hashem, that when it speaks about the Avodah Zarah, it says, Pelahem v'lo yedaberu. They have mouths, but they do not speak. They have eyes, they do not see, and so on and so forth. And Maral speaks about the fact that the peh, that the mouth, is ikar ha'adam. That's the main part of a person, as we said, ruach mamalula, right? The power of speech. So what's going on? We're saying it's the most physical thing in a human being, right? The most physical of the senses of a human being, because it moves, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have it. But on the other hand, it seems to be the one of the highest things that's there in a human being. Baruch atu Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bidvarei. So explains the Maral. He says, "Ein zedavar kasha l'mevin," because hadibur ba'atzmei ein tzafek kivin shalidei hatznua hu poel gashmi. It is no question, he says, that the act of speaking itself, which requires movement, right? Akimas Fasayim Havi Maisa, the Gemara has a discussion about whether movement of the lips is called an action, but it certainly is a movement. But however, Avolhu Aide Sechel Shiyoidea Litzaref Hadibur. But you cannot speak and you have nothing to say without the faculty of intelligence, which is a huge factor that's in play in the power of speech, more than it is in play in anything else. So he says, well, look, you have a child. A child has all of the instruments for using the power of speech. A child has the mouth and the vocal cords and everything else. They have all of those kochos, even to a degree an animal has all of those kochos. However, why can't they speak? because they're missing seichel, they're missing the intelligence which a human being has to have. All that Moshe Rabbeinu was missing was the ability to express that which was in his mind. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't that there was any lack of intelligence. It was that Moshe Rabbeinu just had a physical handicap in the power of speech, rather than it stemming from some kind of a intellectual or a mental limitation that limited Moshe Rabbeinu from being able to speak. And so says the Maharal, that's what we're speaking about. The physical act of speaking is more active and therefore more physical than those of the other senses. But the richness of speech comes from seichel, comes from intelligence. So when a person is able to communicate intelligently, you are able to see the highest power of a human being. But nevertheless, it's being brought out through one of the most involved physical activities of a human being. So the way the Maharal sort of has it is that Dibur, in the full package, intelligent speech, represents the strength of the intellect of the person at the same time as it represents as well the strength of physicality of the person. One of the most, we speak, you know, a person is able to use their fingers and they have various degrees of dexterity in using their fingers and the manipulations which happen with the fingers, but you know, we take for granted here, we sit here and we talk, and the movements of the mouth and of the tongue and of the vocal cords and everything else, all of those things are extremely, extremely developed. And it's not, and it's voluntary movements. Again, it's not like the very sophisticated movements, contractions of the heart muscles, or the very sophisticated functions of the kidneys and of the digestive system and everything else. Those are things which are not done with the conscious choice of the person. Right? The physical strength of a person, while you could speak about power and so on and so forth, but in a certain sense, as the Maharal is pointing out, you think about it, the greatest physical dexterity, in a certain sense, which we have, is around the Koyach HaDibur. So it's the greatest physical strength, and it's also, of course, with what the person says, demonstrates the greatest intellectual strength. So it's most physical and most non-physical at the same time, which in a certain sense is therefore why it is the classic expression of a human being. You know what the Rama says? We make a bracha after we go to the bathroom, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for these systems, and we say, Reife chol basar umafli lasais. Hashem heals our flesh and is mafli lasais. He does that which is pella, which is amazing. Explains the Ramah that the pella that is inherent, that we're speaking about here, is that he is machzik ruchni begashmi. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts together the spirit within the physical. Right? Part of the idea that we're amazed at is because in this bracha we speak about the fact that the person has a spirit, a ruach, within him that is maintained despite all of the complex orifices of the body, right? So they say, you know, if you have a balloon that has a wind, that has air, that has a spirit within it, if it has a little hole, what happens? Right, it's all gone. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps the soul within the body. Okay, so that's Pella, Rav Huttner, in his Mamorim, says that's why we speak about the power of speech in those terms. Ish ki yafli lindar neder, right? Because the power of speech is the mixing of spirit and physical. The Rambam section about things which we create, nedarim, nezirus, and so on and so forth, is called hafloa, from the same term of mafli lasos. Because it is this mix of this physical and the spiritual in the greatest sense. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have that. Why didn't he have it? Posits the Maharal, because Moshe Rabbeinu was such that he was rochek min hachemer. He was a physical human being, but he was most distant from physicality. So this piece, not the intelligence component, the intelligence component, which is the ruach, Moshe Rabbeinu had unquestionably above and beyond everything else. But to have it expressed this way within his physical strengths, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have, because to some degree he transcended physicality, and this is where it was seen. And he uses this to explain in a very creative way a very famous Gemara. A Gemara in Maseches Nida, where the Gemara says, it speaks about the child while the child is still in utero. The child is learning Torah with the Malach. The neshama, the soul of the child, is being developed to the hilt during those months of gestation. He's sitting and he's learning Torah with the Malach. And then the Gemara says, when he's finished, when Sheninar Lotes, when it's time for him to leave the world, so a Malach comes, everybody knows this, right, because of the attached legend, the Malach comes, Besatre Alpiv, and hits him on the mouth, and immediately he forgets all of the Torah which he learns. So the question is, why is the way this is accomplished by the hitting him on the mouth? Right, you know, people, there are all these legends. I don't know that there's any validity to any of it. That creates this little thing here in the, you know, beneath the septum or whatever you call this thing, the middle of the nose, and you know, you see a child sometimes born without it, and they know everything, right? So you know, right? But the idea is he taps him on the mouth. Someone else says, what's the idea that he taps him on the mouth? And he says the idea is, because the mouth and the power of speech is, as we've said, the consummate expression of the physical human being. It's that which he's able to use, which is the greatest kayach gashmi. And so, as the child is being finished, the child's ready to leave, to come out into this world. That means that his physical development is finishing. What's the last thing in terms of this physical development? Is the koyach hadibur. He says the term, the malach comes and hits him on the mouth, is analogous to the term which we have in Hilchos Shabbos, where we speak out one of the 39 malachas is makeh bepatish, the final hammer blow. In other words, when you have a kli, when you have an item, some kind of an object, a utensil that you're creating, that you're developing, so you're doing it and it's already functional and fine, but there are just some last things that have to be touched up. That's called the last blows of the hammer that have to be made to even it out, to finish it off. Says the Maharal, what we're talking about here is the makeh bepatish. The tap on the mouth is the makeh bepatish, to complete the human being. And I'm going to read you a little bit of his words. Ki ha'adam mischaber bo ha'neshama el ha'chomer, because in a human being the soul becomes attached to the physicality. U'ba'avur she'ein ha'neshama ha'sichlis mechubar bo ha'chomer. Dehainu bo'oid shlo yotzal avir ha'olam oz nishmasai nivdelas. When the soul is not connected to physicality, meaning before it comes out into the world, before the physical is finished and completed, before the mouth is ready to function, where the mouth is that intense, strongest link and connection between the physical and the spiritual, so the soul is to some degree detached from the body. And when the soul is detached from the body, it gets it. It knows everything. The idea that in utero we say that the neshama, that the malach comes and learns with it, kol ha'Torah kula, of course, you know, so you say, okay, you know what, they're sitting there and they're shuckling over a Gemara, you know, in utero with a malach, that's the illustrative, that's the picturesque way of seeing it. The way the Maharal explains it is much simpler. The neshama knows the Torah. It doesn't get taught the Torah. The neshama knows the Torah. The neshama is a portion, a chelek ha'leikami mal, it's part of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Hashem infuses us with a bit of himself. And so the neshama inherently knows the Torah. I've told you, some of you certainly before, that this is the incredibly beautiful to me explanation that Rav Meir Simcha, the Meshech Chachma, says in Parshas Nitzavim, when the Torah says, Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people, you should know the Torah, the mitzvah that I'm giving you today, it's not in the heavens, it's not overseas, that you have to go very great distances to get it. It's very close to you. It is in your mouth and in your heart to do it. Explains the Meshech Chachma, because you have an neshama, and the neshama knows exactly what's right. If the neshama is a part of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, so Torah is part of the program that's there within the neshama. And therefore, he says, that's why we're saying the study of Torah is not to go to learn something new that's out there. The study of Torah is to discover what's already in there, inside of you in the neshama, to expose the understandings which your conscience, a.k.a. your neshama, have inherently. So explains the Maharal, before the soul is really, really attached to a functioning human body, so as detached as a soul, it knows the Torah. That's the idea, that for the 9 months before, you know, as the soul has already been designated for this body, but it is not yet attached to the body, the soul is still in the world of the spirit, where it knows and understands all that is right, all that is true, kol ha-Torah kula. But as the soul, as the body is completed, as the child is ready to leave, and as is, again, illustrated by the idea of the power of speech, which is where the soul is seen as being bound up with the body. And the body is finished with that makab patish on the mouth, which is again the highest, fullest expression of physicality, remarkably. Just, again, the muscles and powers of articulation of words, rather than the intelligence that goes behind them. That's when the person forgets the Torah. Because why, if our soul knows the Torah, do we not know the Torah? Why, if our soul knows the Torah, do we have to learn? Do we have to hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to us at our Sinai to tell us and to instruct us as to what to do? Because when the soul becomes wrapped up in a physical body, it doesn't necessarily make its voice heard. And the people who we are a combination of soul and body, we don't necessarily know what to do. Until we learn from the outside and dig deep on the inside to be able to do it. So it is in the completion of the physical person, as seen by the power of speech, that ironically the seichel loses its place. But it's going to be exactly there that it will again find its place. It's very, very, it's a very, to me, it's a very creative and unusual understanding. I mean, usually we, you know, the power of speech is the highest faculty of a human being. That's where the intelligence is seen. But the Maharal is also accenting it as the completion of the physicality of the person. And so, again, back to the core question, I just want to read out over here before we do it, because, again, now he brings what we've mentioned a few times, which is that when it says man came alive, it says he was ruach memalala, he was a speaking spirit. Because a human being, what a human being is the combination of the intelligent soul and the physical body. Okay, we got you back?
Yeah.
Okay. So the koyach of the tzura of a person is the combination of the soul, the intellectual soul, the spiritual soul with the physical body. And that's the power of speech, which, as we said, is the neshama based on what he says, together with the guf, the physicality, based on how those words are delivered. And the koyach hamedaber, the power of speech, is gemar tzuraso. It is the finishing of that combination of the two. So when he's in his mother's stomach, and he doesn't yet have the ruach memalala, so he's still connected completely. The spiritual is distinct from the physical. And therefore, there the spiritual, so to speak, is learning with the malach. There the spiritual knows what is what. It's only when it gets blended with the physicality, which again creates the great potential for the body to be spiritualized. But at the same time, until that potential is actualized, and to the extent that that potential is never actualized, the neshama is weakened. Moshe Rabbeinu lacked the power of speech because his chumrius, his physicality, was never quite complete. In a certain sense, Moshe Rabbeinu is like the baby that his, when we speak about his power of speech being incomplete, it's not that Moshe Rabbeinu was a balmum, was blemished. It's that he never reached the climax of physicality because with him, the spiritual was intended to prevail. That's the way the Maharal very creatively interprets this. That's the core understanding of the Maharal here in Perek Chaf Ches.
Don't say that moon or whatever we're calling it happened later in life.
There's a medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, he put the coal in his mouth instead of the gold, whatever it was, you know, in that thing that it's attributable to a specific story. And yes, according to the Maharal, it would be neater, it would might seem, if he never actually had a koyach hadibur, he never actually had a power of speech to begin with. Remember that, you know, maybe just to mitigate this a little bit, that story is a story which is told about Moshe Rabbeinu, the little child. And Moshe Rabbeinu, the little child, doesn't have a developed koyach hadibur. They don't have that yet. So Moshe Rabbeinu may have never actually had it in actuality, and that, you know, may be made to fit. But he doesn't even cite that over here in this discussion. And he says that, you know, in understanding this and thinking about this, he doesn't quote many of the Chazalim, but he just quotes one example of many, the Gemara in Psachim. I think he chooses this because it expresses it specifically in terms of speech. It says, Marbe Dvorim, Marbe Shtus. The more words, the more foolishness. And which, of course, is the other way of saying what Chazal say in many ways, where they praise the power of shtika, of silence. They praise the virtue of silence. Right? Siyag l'chachma, shtika. Right? That which produces the fence for wisdom, the guide for wisdom, is silence. Right? I didn't find anything greater, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said that I never found anything greater than Lematzasi Luguf Taiv Mishtika. Right? So I found nothing better for the person than silence. Right? Talking is not such a good thing. Why? So the Maharal is saying, you know, in this light is because the power of speech is such a power gashmi, it's such a physical power. And the more you use it, therefore, the more foolishness. Now, what's the idea? Well, listening is passive, and speaking is active. Listening is how you absorb wisdom. Speaking is how you communicate wisdom. The more you speak, the less you absorb. Right? It's that kind of an idea. So on the one hand, the koyach hadibur, the power of speech, is the greatest articulation, it's the greatest expression of the seichel which is inside the person, but it's not the greatest developer of the seichel which is inside the person. The greatest developer is the more passive function, like listening, which, as we say, the physical is always running around. The ruchni is more of a constant, more there. So you have to put these ideas together. It's very delicate, this mix of ideas of the strengths and weaknesses of these various powers. Yes.
If silence is gold, and being soft, certain gold. Did when Aaron spoke to Pharaoh, or when the prophets talked to the people, what kind of speech did they use? Was it an exhorting, loud speech, or was it very, very soft spoken? And even the remnant, we can compare, I mean, frankly, one of the things that a Jew can enjoy about his Shabbos and his is a rabbi speaks softly. If the other religions, it's not so. They exhort, they yell, they speak. You know, is this something that is inherent?
There are, you know, the pasuk in Mishle says divrei chachamim v'nachas nishmoim. The words of the wise are heard when expressed gently. V'nachas nishmoim. You know, this notion of soft spokenness, manerach meishiv chema, right? A soft demeanor turns away anger. You know, it doesn't rile people up. In fact, calms people down. You know, the praise of soft spokenness is found in many different places. It's an interesting suggestion, and I like the suggestion that to some degree, there, it's if articulation of words is described as such an intense activity, well, a person who speaks fast and loud and so on and so forth is getting that much more, you know, sucked into this very, very intense physical activity. But the person who speaks softly and a little bit more deliberately, so they are even moderating the physicality of that activity, and it would have the similar kinds of appraise like silence. He has to speak. You can't be quiet all the time, but to speak with silence is in itself a praise of that. So it's a nice point.
Do we know that Aaron spoke softly, or the prophet spoke softly, or did they really exhort the people?
I think that everybody involved sometimes spoke softly and sometimes spoke strongly. I think that's what we will see when we see what their words. It depends on the situation. Moshe Rabbeinu was considered to be more strongly spoken than Aaron HaKohen, who was more, you know, more peaceful. Okay. So let's move on here a little bit to a little bit more. In fact, part of what the Maharal is going to speak of, he now says a real additional piece, which is very, very novel, very, very chiddushik. He says that a similar thing to relate this to is the Gemara discusses, Rashi quotes it in Chumash in Parshas Tzav, that when Moshe Rabbeinu was preparing the Mishkan, so during the 7 days before the 8th day of dedication, where Aaron and his sons were installed and dedicated as the Kohanim, so Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash. Moshe Rabbeinu served in the interim as the Kohen. What did Moshe Rabbeinu wear when he served as the Kohen? B'meshi mesh Moshe. What did Moshe Rabbeinu wear? He didn't wear the Bigdei Kohuna. We don't find that. They were only made for Bigdei Kodesh Lari Nachicha. So it says he wore a chaluk lavon she'ein lo imra, a simple white cloak without even a hem. She'ein lo imra. So says the Maharal, what is the significance of that? He says because intelligence, right? We say that the person when we say that somebody's correct, we say machvarta in the Gemara k'Rav Shimon ben Lakish. Right? What seems white is like a Shimon Lakish. Now that's not because I am having a problem with my articulation this morning. It's not what seems right. What seems white, right? W-H-I-T-E. What seems white. In other words, clarity, without you know, complex confusion of arguments, is that which is white. That which is white is considered to be clear. And we say, it says so it was that clarity, that beauty, that perfection, right? And that's the Kech HaSeichel, without the power of the goof, without the power of the body. The Maharal explains elsewhere that it is for similar reasons that the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, when he went into the Holy of Holies, wore what's called the Bigdei Lavan, just the white garments. He didn't wear his elaborate, multicolored garments and the gold and so on and so forth. Because it is the simplicity, the pashtus, which he emphasizes more in his Gur Aryeh in Parshas Tzav, the pashtus, the simplicity, and here he emphasizes the whiteness, you know, the simplicity, the clarity, the seichel shabai, that is there. And says the Maharal, a pun. he understands Chazal is delivering a pun. It says she'en lo imra. An imra is, in that context, it doesn't have a hem, it doesn't have an edge. But imra is from the Lashon, spelled Aleph, Mem, Resh, Aleph. Imra is speech. He says that that's the thing, that he was not a Baal Amira. He had the Seichel, which was white and clear, but he did not have Imra. He did not have that power of speech. Now, what are you talking about? What kind of ridiculous thing? That's a nice pun, you know, but it's talking about a garment. A garment doesn't have a power of speech. Explains the Maharal that the Imra is the edge of the garment. It's the finish of the garment. And I just finished explaining to you that what is the finishing power that exists within the human being is the power of speech. So the term Imra actually means the finish. And it comes across in a human being as the power of speech, because that is the finished product, so to speak, of the human being. That's the finished product of the human being. Says the Maharal, that's the idea which is represented here, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu presented himself that way, with that simple cloak, which had no edge, which had no finish, because Moshe Rabbeinu was not as developed with the complexity physically. Moshe Rabbeinu was more soul, and the soul. What if you had to paint the color of the soul? What would you think the color would be?
White.
It would be white. Very good. Okay. So that's the fundamental idea here that's being taught by the Maharal, and maybe next time we're going to look we'll look at the last paragraph that the Maharal teaches here in Perek Chav Ches, or maybe we'll just go on to Perek Chav Tes. But this is really the closing of this idea about. Moshe Rabbeinu loy ish devarim. So this again, to summarize, the creative approach of the Maharal was to explain that the power of speech is actually a very physical expression of a human being. Yes, where the physical is tied up with the spirit, with the soul, but that's a blessing, and it's not a blessing. It's a blessing in the sense that here the soul, right, the human being is a very physical human being, and the soul gets to influence it, and so on and so forth, and to transform it, and to be expressed through it, through the Koyach HaDibur. But if the soul was able to remain a little bit detached from the human being, that would also result in a lack of a Koyach HaDibur. So in a sense, there could be a lack of a power of speech when there's no soul to influence the body. Like in a behemoth, in an animal, there's no strength of the soul to articulate, to have it in a strong power of speech. In the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't the lack of soul. Of course it wasn't the lack of soul. It was the lack of connection, that the soul wasn't trapped in the body. And therefore, since the soul was somewhat independent, it wouldn't express itself through this tremendous physical quality of speech. And the soul remained apart. And that's why, because Moshe Rabbeinu was such a spiritual being, just like the baby, before the power of speech, the soul remains the part and knows the entirety of Torah. So too in Moshe Rabbeinu's case it was the same. That's the creative approach of the Maharal to understanding this idea of Moshe Rabbeinu not being a natural ish devarim.
Good.